Good morning, Connecticut. To our friends across the sound, it's John Voquette, Director of Public Affairs for Connoisseur Media. Thanks for tuning in to our award-winning For the People, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. Hey, are you or do you anticipate having to help arrange for a companion or homemaker for an ailing or aging loved one? A few weeks ago, Connecticut's Department of Consumer Protection released a new fact sheet for consumers who are seeking to hire homemakers and companions. So we'll check in with the state's Consumer Protection Commissioner herself to hear how this new publication can help families understand the process of working with homemaker companion agencies so they're able to make the best decisions possible for their specific needs. Then we're going to turn to a researcher at Sacred Heart University, which recently released a poll showing that public awareness and frustration over state budget concerns and declining services and quality of life could lead to residents voting with their feet in the coming years. According to the poll, 50% of our state's highest earning population may be considering relocating somewhere else. So we'll talk about the poll and its implications on Connecticut's economy. Then we'll close with a representative from the state's health insurance marketplace, Access Health CT. Did you know open enrollment is on now, but the deadline to enroll is coming up quickly? We'll remind you about the swiftly approaching enrollment deadline and review a number of important points you need to know about getting insured under the Affordable Care Act. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Voquette, right after this musical reminder. Yes, the Connecticut Yuletide Carolers are celebrating the start of the holiday season with a concert of carols on Sunday, November 26th at 7 p.m. at the United Methodist Church in Brantford. Victorian carolers will fill the winter air with the bright sounds of the season, singing traditional and contemporary Christmas music a cappella in harmony to bring holiday cheer to young and old alike. Refreshments will be served afterwards. There's a suggested donation of $15, and all proceeds benefit the church's General Operating Fund. If you'd like to learn more, you can go to ctyuletide.com. Well, I am so pleased, as I always am, to welcome any commissioner of Connecticut's Department of Consumer Protection. Our current one here in Connecticut is Michelle Siegel, and she is on the line with me this morning. And what prompted me to call was just a couple of weeks ago, the Department of Consumer Protection released a new fact sheet for consumers that are seeking to hire homemakers and companions. It's meant to help families understand the process of working with homemaker companion agencies and individuals who do the work so they're able to make the best decisions possible for their specific needs. So, Commissioner Siegel, thank you for joining us. As we kind of talked a little bit about before we turned on the microphone, this is a document whose time has come none too soon. But before we dig in to talk a little bit more about the particulars in the document, just give folks a little introduction of yourself. Tell us what brought you to Department of Consumer Protection and a little bit about this very diverse agency that really gets into a lot of folks' lives and businesses, whether they know it or not.
All right. Well, thank you for having me and for drawing attention to this important issue. So I've been with the Department of Consumer Protection for just over 6 years, first as the Deputy Commissioner and more recently now as Commissioner. And yeah, as you said, we regulate a large part of the market. And really, in big picture, our goal is to just try to make the marketplace a safer place for consumers out there, and we do that in a lot of different areas and in a lot of different ways. So among the divisions we have is we regulate legalized gaming in the state, so the lottery and the casinos. We have responsibility for liquor control, responsibility over drug manufacturers and pharmacies. But also a big part of what we do is licensing. And we have over 200,000 credential holders that we oversee. And this is anybody from home improvement contractors, real estate agents, electricians, plumbers. But among those, we register homemaker companion agencies. And so a big part of what we do, in addition to regulating the market, is we really try to get information out to consumers and really empower them to make well-informed decisions in the market and to be able to understand the sort of businesses out there how they should operate and the best way for consumers to make good choices for whatever their needs may be.
And in a lot of ways, between your office and the Attorney General's office, you are sort of the first line of defense when a consumer gets scammed or injured or is in some other way negatively impacted by a product or service, whether it is purveyed or obtained here in Connecticut or elsewhere.
Yeah, we work closely with the Attorney General's office, and they do a great job as well. So certainly when consumers find themselves having a problem, you know, they can file a complaint with us for us to look into it. But what's really important to us and the best thing we want for consumers is for consumers to not have those problems in the first place. And so when we see industries where maybe consumers are making rushed decisions or there's a lot of complex issues for a consumer to go through before making a decision, we're trying to put out some guides for consumers so they can up front make better informed decisions, and hopefully we can even prevent some of these problems that we later find we're getting complaints about.
And that brings us right back around and segues us back into the matter at hand very well. So often when families need help with someone who is injured, whether it's a parent, an aging relative, this is a decision that sometimes, probably more often than not, it has to be made really, really fast. And as you just mentioned, when people make quick decisions, sometimes they don't have the time to do the research. And that is part of the reason why your agency has come up with this Homemaker Companion Agency's Guide for Consumers.
Absolutely, that's right. We know this is not something that people necessarily think way far in advance about or can plan for at their leisure. It often an event happens, and now they need to react to it. And so we wanted to have something that's really easy and easy to read, easy to understand, that'll walk people through. Here are the types of things you should be thinking about, because now that you are confronted with this situation and haven't perhaps been thinking about it, we want to kind of walk people through some of that.
And certainly the Connecticut Department of Health oversees and regulates skilled care in nursing homes and in-home nursing and hospice agencies. But when it comes to something that's kind of a little bit more lower level, like companions and homemakers for individuals who may not be at the point where they need skilled care, but they do need this type of intervention and support, tell us a little bit about what's on the books in terms of laws and statutes. Is there a substantial or at least a potent quantity of regulation in terms of agencies like this?
There is. So first, I want to thank you. You raised a really good point, and it's important for people to understand that when they do need somebody who can help with their medical care, they do need to be looking for someone licensed by the Department of Public Health. So, right, what we're talking about here are these homemaker companion agencies, and what they're available to do is help with some basic sort of household chores, maybe do some cooking. Maybe they can take, like, grocery shopping, those types of non-medical type issues. But as to your question, there is, you know, an entire law devoted just to homemaker companion agencies, and so there's a fair amount of consumer protections built into that, particularly the type of information that should be in a consumer contract is really important. The agencies are required to do a background check on the people, and if you're looking to hire someone, you can request that information through us. So there are some, you know, really important protections. So, you know, the first thing as you're doing, and you'll sort of see in our guide, is you want to make sure that the person you're hiring is, whether there's agencies and registries, and that'll be an important distinction I can talk about as well. Mm-hmm. But make sure they're registered with us so that you know that this is a legitimate agency that you're dealing with and that these protections that are in the law are available to you.
Yeah, you make an important point because, the thought of getting help for mom or dad or another loved one or an individual who may be permanently or temporarily disabled. It used to be, you know, you'd get a cousin or an aunt to do it, maybe a neighbor. At least the referral for an individual who you were hiring on your own might would almost always come from a trusted source that could vouch for that individual. But when you're dealing with an agency, you're dealing with an entity where the person who you're talking to on the phone is not going to be the person that's coming out to take care of mom or dad.
Right. So the it may not be. So somebody you know. So certainly once you're dealing with an agency, you know, one thing, so in addition to making sure they're registered with us, it is always a good idea to ask for references. So if you, you know, are looking for someone for maybe an elder family member, you may want to ask around, see if any of your friends or neighbors have had to use a homemaker companion agency, and do if you have the luxury of a little bit of time. It's always great to do your homework, try to get references, and feel comfortable you're working with an agency that others have used and that has worked out well for them.
Mm-hmm. And you did mention employer model versus registry model. What are the differences?
So, yeah, that's a really important thing to be for you to understand when you're making these choices. So there's agencies who will employ homemaker companions, and then you, when you work with them, they'll assign one to work with you or for your loved one who you're hiring them for. And in that situation, the agency is really responsible for all the basic employer sort of tasks, the taxes, having the unemployment insurance, those types of things. In some instances, you may be working with an agency that's using a sort of a contractor model where you, the person who's hired the homemaker companion, are actually now the person who's essentially serving as the employer. In these situations, you may have some responsibility for taxes, for overtime, minimum wage laws come into play, workers' compensation. So there's a number of things that come into play when you become the employer. And so that may work out for you, or there may be a price difference where it's worth it to you, but it's definitely something you want to be sure you know you're doing and you've made that decision consciously.
So maybe it's oversimplifying, but sort of the difference between maybe hiring someone that you heard about from your cousin as a babysitter versus putting your child in daycare, that kind of thing?
Sort of along those lines. It's sort of the difference are you hiring the agency and the agency is employing the person who's coming into your home, or are you the one who's actually hiring as your employee this person who's coming into your home? And it may not always be intuitively obvious, because all you know is that there's somebody coming in to help you, but it's a really important difference, and that's one thing that should be laid out, and the law requires that it be laid out in the contract you receive. So it's just it's an important thing. So, you know, when you get your contract, read it over and be sure you understand which model you're under and that you're comfortable with that.
Okay. Anything else that the consumer or the intermediary for the individual who will be receiving care needs to know before they sign their contract?
Well, it's just really important to understand all the different parts of the contract. So be sure you understand what are the different services you're receiving, and what are the costs. You know, in some cases, you may want to understand, is there what's the charge if you know, maybe have a break-in service? So suppose the person, you know, has to go to the hospital for a while and you don't need a homemaker companion for a period of time. Are there going to be charges associated with that? So there's a variety of things. You just, as you think through what are your needs, you know, make sure the contract matches up with it and that you understand, you know, what's the policy on gratuities is, you know, another common one, or for holidays, those types of things.
I'm glad you brought up the gratuity situation, because I have an acquaintance, and it just brought it to mind when you said it, that she was getting some assistance because of the geographical distance between where she lived and worked and where her mom was here in Connecticut. And there were some individuals that came in. I couldn't even say if they were through an agency or contracted directly, but there was almost an apparent expectation of gratuity, that it was an unspoken part of the deal, and in one of the cases, the caregiver actually kind of laid out, well, you know, I'm going to need you to not only provide me with, access to groceries while I'm here, but also, I'll need money for my car and this and that. Are there any specific protections within the law, or if this comes up with a consumer or the intermediary for the person receiving care, should they simply just call the Department of Consumer Protection for advice or to make a complaint?
So, and this is why, like, taking a look at that contract is really important. And I know often, you know, people are rushed, and it's kind of can be a long and sometimes intimidating document. But really, to be fairly clearly paid out, like, what you are supposed to be paying for and what you're receiving. And, you know, if your contract doesn't have something about you're going to be paying for the gas or the mileage or that piece of it, then you shouldn't really have to do that. And they should be telling you what are the gratuities, like what is their policy? Do they allow gratuities? Is there a cap on it? Or maybe they say their staff is not supposed to accept gratuities. So understanding that, so then when you all of a sudden get pressured, you sort of know in advance, okay, this is what I signed up for or not what I signed up for. In terms of if you feel like you're being pushed to pay for things you don't think you should be paying for, or you have other complaints, one thing that also they should be telling you up front is their instructions for filing a complaint with the agency itself. So that's always a good first step. Follow the process for filing a complaint with the agency so you feel like the person in your house is now sort of pressuring you to pay for things that aren't in the contract. And hopefully the business will be able to work it out in a way you're satisfied with. But, yeah, absolutely. If what you're finding is that you've tried that and you're still not happy with how it's been resolved, you can file a complaint with us. I can give you our email address is DCP, as in Department of Consumer Protection, so dcp.investigations@ct.gov. And you can also give us a call at 860-713-6100.
Yeah, there's because Commissioner Siegel, there's a lot of dynamics, of course, as you know, that come into play here. The fear that the individual may not get the level of care without a gratuity that they might get with a gratuity or with some additional support, whether they ask for it or not. And it's awkward because you're afraid, well, if I don't tip this person, then maybe they won't come back, or it's going to be harder to get people. That in particular has kind of surfaced as being a concern.
I could certainly, yeah, understand that would be a concern. And so, you know, maybe good, you may want to pick a place that kind of has a no gratuity policy so that you have a way to try to avoid that. And then when you're pressured to make those, you have something to point to. But certainly if you feel like you're being pressured to pay more than you signed up for and you can't work it out with the agency, then, you should file a complaint with us and we'll take a look at it as well.
Excellent. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to speak with us this morning. Commissioner Michelle Siegel is with the Connecticut Department of Consumer Protection. Just a couple of weeks ago, the department released a new fact sheet for consumers seeking to hire homemakers and companions. It's meant to help families understand the process of working with homemaker companion agencies and individuals so that they can make the best decisions possible. You can access that directly through the Department of Consumer Protection at ct.gov/DCP or just web search the guide for companions and homemakers for Connecticut DCP. Thank you, Commissioner, for being part of the program this morning and all the great information to help folks who are pressed into these situations, often at the spur of the moment when they have to get help for a loved one who needs companion and homemaker service in their home. Thanks again. Well, we've heard about other states in New England experiencing something that I guess you could refer to as earner flight. A lot of the younger millennials and Generation Xers are even leaving certain states and leaving them without the high earning incomes that would kind of turn into taxation that would end up covering the cost of programs and services for state residents. Here in Connecticut, a statewide public policy poll was conducted a couple of weeks ago, or concluded a couple of weeks ago, by Sacred Heart University's Institute for Public Policy, and Connecticut residents overwhelmingly indicated significant anxiety over the state's budget woes, which appear to be moving into the clear, at least from a resolution point at this point, and the prospect of deep cuts to essential services regardless. We're so pleased to be on the line this morning with Leslie DeNardis. She's director of the Sacred Heart University Institute for Public Policy and the Master of Public Administration Program at Sacred Heart University. She was also a key person in developing and carrying out this poll. Leslie, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
So I guess the only thing that may be different today as we speak to you on Thursday afternoon than it was when you released the poll around October 23rd is it appears there's a state budget here in Connecticut. Can you talk about any potential impact this might have in either the input or results of the poll?
I'd be delighted to, John. In fact, yes, our poll was released two or three days prior to the resolution of the longest budget crisis in Connecticut state history. In fact, we were waiting for in excess of 4 months for the state legislative leaders to come together and finally pass a budget, which they did a few days later. I don't know that it's going to substantially alter or change the conversation or really it's going to take several budget cycles before we work our way out of the persistent and long-standing structural problems that we have in our state.
Okay. Well, before we get into the details of the poll, I understand this was conducted along with a collaborative partner, Great Blue?
Yes, they're called Great Blue Research here in Connecticut, and they provided the actual fielding of the polling questions, the survey methodology, and the analysis of the results. And so it's a, you know, partnership between our institution, Sacred Heart University, and this private firm that provides professional polling services.
And a thousand, or in excess of a thousand successful polling experiences were completed?
Yes, 1,000 respondents.
Very good. Tell us a little bit before we get into it about the Institute for Public Policy.
Sure. Well, the idea for the Institute for Public Policy came about because there were a number of us who were of the opinion that the problems in Connecticut were becoming so acute on many different levels, right? So, you know, news of our state's woes are reaching around the nation. We've been highlighted and profiled in outlets such as the Atlantic Monthly, and they had an article called What's Wrong with Connecticut? The Slate carried news of Connecticut. And so a small state like ours is receiving a lot of attention, and I'm afraid that some of it's been unflattering. And we've known for a while, those of us who follow public policy in Connecticut, that we've got some deep and persistent issues that we think require the ongoing efforts of academics, the policy community, all trying to bring to bear on not just focusing on the problems, but also perhaps highlighting through our research and our polls, maybe coming together for some problem solving.
Well, how much do you think, either you know, speaking for yourself or through information that you've been able to gather in the poll or just in the Institute, you know, how much of being the brunt of jokes on late night TV and in podcasts and in publications like you quoted Slate and such, how much of that influences individuals to potentially, if not leave a state that they're residing in, but maybe give them pause to think about it at least?
Well, John, that's an interesting question. I'm sure it doesn't help. And I think, you know, Connecticut residents showed a high level of awareness in our poll about the state budget crisis. And I think they're concerned about, you know, their quality of life, and they're concerned that, you know, they can't maintain their standard of living. And I think that it doesn't help now. I think it makes it even more acute that we're receiving some national attention. But I think fundamentally Connecticut residents are hoping that the state can resolve these issues favorably, because I'm sure that they would like to remain here. I think people generally like Connecticut, but they feel that the ability to maintain their quality of life is a bit in jeopardy.
When the policy poll determines that there was a significant anxiety over the state's budget woes, was there a follow-up indicating, would you be less anxious, or something like, paraphrasing, of course, but would you be less anxious once you learn the state completed and passed a budget?
No, we didn't specifically have a question like that, but we are going to be doing a follow-up poll very soon, in about another month, and we are going to query residents, you know, now that the budget has passed, does this allay your concerns? And okay. This address your concerns.
Yeah. This also speaks to another issue, because obviously in another 2 weeks, municipal and local state elections will be over. People I've heard through friends and acquaintances are basically getting burnt out from pollsters calling. I've had a number call on my cell phone, which has a do not call. But, you know, we know political polling is kind of can skirt that. Let's talk for a few minutes, or even a moment, about the importance of people kind of vetting these calls, so that when an organization like Sacred Heart University calls them, why it is quite important for them to consider taking that call and completing that poll.
Oh, that's an excellent question. I'm so glad you asked it. We really view ourselves, and we were founded for the purpose of providing nonpartisan, independent research. We really wanted to provide a voice for people, and we wanted to connect their voices to state government. And our fervent hope is that state government would actually heed some of the results from our polls. And so we're truly, you know, unlike any sort of a commercial outfit, we're truly an independent institute. And we're solely doing this to illuminate and highlight serious questions that then we hope will feed into the policy discussion in Hartford. And so that is why I think if people know and can appreciate that, they'll look upon answering a 20-minute phone call maybe as a public service.
So when they hear that it is a state university-based academic poll, those are sort of those are the words to prick up the ears with. That should signal that this is neither a kind of a political push poll or something that is going to you know, work into a larger national kind of scope.
Absolutely. We are an independent, nonpartisan. That means that our research is objective and neutral.
Excellent. Folks, if you're just joining us, we're talking with Leslie DiNardi. She's director of the Sacred Heart University Institute for Public Policy and the Master of Public Administration program at SHU. They recently, just a couple of weeks ago, actually released a very important poll talking about how the state's higher earners may be more inclined to leave the state in the next 5 years. Leslie, before we take a quick break, let's get into some of the ideas that came through the respondents regarding revenue generation to potentially offset the loss of taxation through these higher earners and their flight from Connecticut. I see the potential legalization of marijuana was mentioned in some of the introductory information that I have. Certainly we've had pro and con initiatives on this program. Tell us a little bit about whether folks are seeing sooner than later marijuana being a potential answer to this question, or if not, what other ideas our own state residents were able to proffer through this poll.
We polled residents on, you know, how would you resolve the budget crisis? Would you do it through raising existing taxes, would you accomplish it through entirely new sources of revenue, or would you cut state services? And so they overwhelmingly responded that their preference would be for new revenue generation. And because we know that surrounding states have moved to legalize marijuana, for instance, our neighbor to the north, Massachusetts, we felt that it was a question that we would probe Connecticut residents on. And they were overwhelmingly in favor of the legalization of marijuana. They were also overwhelmingly in favor of the institution of instituting polls. Tolls.
More electronic tolls,
we're one of the few states in our region that don't have electronic tolls. And so it's interesting to note that the legislative leadership were not interested in addressing either of these questions. In fact, neither one of them made their way onto the legislative agenda or got a hearing during this past session.
Very good. Almost one in three individuals polled by Sacred Heart University believe the overall quality of life in Connecticut is declining. We're going to talk more about the results of this Sacred Heart University collaborative poll with one of its primary authors and key spokespeople, Leslie DeNardis of Sacred Heart University. We'll be back with Leslie for about another 9 or 10 minutes right after this break. Folks, stick with us. Do you love Connecticut? If you do, there are hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots causes that would love to have your support. You can learn about many of them through LoveCT. Just go to our radio station website, hit the event guide tab, and click on to LoveCT to help the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. We'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. Acts 4 Ministry Incorporated, a non-denominational, non-profit charitable organization in the greater Waterbury area, is seeking donations of winter coats and accessories for children and adults during their annual Share the Warmth drive that's happening through December 31st. The organization is seeking gently used clothes, hats, gloves, scarves, blankets, new socks, and new thermals for adults and children. Donations can be dropped off at Acts 4 Ministry at 1713 Thomaston Avenue in Waterbury, weekdays from 9 to 3, or there's a 24/7 drop box outside the building. And if you'd like to establish a donations bin at your location, or if you're having a group or business that would like to take up a large donation drive, you can learn more about pickups and getting that bin placed at their website. It's acts4.org. That's A-C-T-S, the number 4, .org. All right, we're back with Leslie DeNardis having a great conversation. She is director of the Sacred Heart University Institute for Public Policy and the Master of Public Administration program at Sacred Heart down in Fairfield in a new statewide public policy poll that was conducted earlier in October by the Institute. Connecticut residents overwhelmingly indicated significant anxiety over the state's budget woes and the prospect of deep cuts to essential services. The poll was examining the potential for higher earner flight out of Connecticut, and we've had some interesting and stimulating backstory on that. Let's get into the nuts and bolts of some of the specifics and the findings in the poll, Leslie. What were a few of the real overwhelming sentiments expressed by respondents that you reached here in Connecticut earlier in October?
Sure. I think resoundingly high number of people are concerned about the overall tax burden, about 90%. Your listeners may know or may not be aware that we have the second highest tax burden in the country. This is according to the Tax Foundation. We also have the sixth highest cost of living in the country. And again, 90% are concerned about the high cost of living in Connecticut.
So as a result, this is where the numbers came that indicated there could be a bubble of earner flight from the state?
Absolutely. So nearly 50% of our respondents, those making $150,000 or more, responded that they are contemplating moving out of the state sometime in the next 5 years. So that should certainly have policymakers greatly concerned, because we see that people are taking their discontent and their concerns, and they have been voting with their feet, so to speak, as the expression goes, for quite some time. In fact, in Connecticut, we have a high level of out-migration. That is to say, more residents are moving out of the state than are moving in. And so I think this just continues with that worrisome trend.
Were there any questions in the poll or any indication through the respondents' answers that any proportion of anxiety was more as a result of things going on in Washington, or were these answers pretty exclusive to what was going on in the state up until just a day or so ago as we taped this?
Good question. This poll was entirely focused on the state of Connecticut because we feel that for too long, you know, there have been other entities that have gauged and done survey research in Connecticut, but really no outfit out there who is focusing on Connecticut. And we felt that we really wanted to find out what was the sentiment among Connecticut residents about Connecticut issues. So we didn't really poll them. There was only one question that asked them to compare which level of government do you have the most trust in, whether it's federal, state, or local. And unsurprisingly, it came out that people trusted local government more so than state and more so than federal to resolve problems.
And that's so interesting because in my other life covering local municipal government, it seems like the turnout of voters upcoming, but will have happened past tense as we broadcast this, election day will be over for municipal elections, but I dare predict that the turnout will continue to be very, very low across the state of Connecticut. Is there some idea of where that, from you as an educator and as an academic, is there some idea as to where that disconnect happens? People have the most trust in their local government,
yeah,
and yet they're still unwilling or unable to come out and participate at that level where they have the greatest influence?
I think that you've hit upon a huge paradox. I mean, it is a total puzzle, as you point out, that the level of trust is stronger with the level of government that you can sort of see and touch and you're closest to and maybe you have more familiarity with. But yet, at the same time, doesn't seem to be driving turnout at the polls. Maybe this will be different this time around because I think Connecticut residents understand and appreciate the magnitude of the problems that we have, and perhaps we will see higher turnout rates. But, you know, they're not making the connection between the local level of government and having some being able to address some of these problems. And I think that they're going to start to have to connect those dots more.
Yeah. The other disturbing thing is the concern. We've talked the 800-pound gorilla is this new potential Amazon headquarters. Connecticut was one of the many contenders. It is one of the many contenders for this new Amazon headquarters. From all I've heard through my guests and in reporting on business and economic development, Connecticut is still out there strongly touting itself as being a great destination for businesses to come with a highly educated and motivated workforce. And yet then we see a poll like this, which sends a different signal, especially when businesses are thinking long game and they're looking, oh, geez, in 5 years, Connecticut, according at least to the Sacred Heart University poll, is going to be in a significantly less potent position to supply our workforce if we end up considering relocating or expanding there.
Yeah, no, there is a disconnect, as you say, in the obviously the potential or the attempt to woo businesses to our state. Obviously, the State Department of Economic Development is, of course, going to do its utmost to portray Connecticut as being business friendly. However, that is at odds with residents and our respondents are saying. About 3/5 of our respondents reported that Connecticut should consider policies which make Connecticut more business friendly. So about 62% say that we need to be more business friendly, that we're not doing enough.
Very good. Now, do I see correctly that the poll also asked a question or sought some input on the cost of energy here? Because we just saw headlines this morning that the electric utility is asking for quite a substantial increase in their rates in the coming weeks.
In Connecticut?
Yes.
Yes. People are squeezed from all angles and all, you know, in terms of their household budgets, and they're feeling the squeeze, particularly in their energy bills. We have, I think, again, and we're in the top five for having the highest energy costs in the nation. And when people get their monthly, you know, bills, they're quite jaw-dropping. Mm. I can say that for myself. So, you know, we look at these costs, and high costs of energy limit people's ability to prosper. They limit businesses' ability to prosper when a huge proportion of your monthly budget is being consumed by these high costs. And so that's something that Connecticut is going to have to think long and hard about.
Very good. Very interesting content for the program today, thanks to Leslie DeNardis. She's director of the Sacred Heart University Institute for Public Policy and the Master of Public Administration program at Sacred Heart University. Their latest poll addressed 1,000 state residents, talking about how residents overwhelmingly indicated anxiety over the state's budget woes, which may not have changed significantly since in the past 48 hours since the budget has been passed. Also, the prospect of deep cuts to essential services as a result of that budget. As we heard from Leslie, her organization will be conducting another poll in the coming weeks. We hope our listeners who may receive that call from Sacred Heart University's Institute for Public Policy will be receptive to participating. And Leslie, we want to thank you for your information this morning, and we look forward to revisiting with you in the coming months to keep tabs on where these polls are leading in terms of how they filter the information coming to you through state residents and getting that up to the State House in Hartford, where lawmakers might be able to do something about it. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me. I've greatly enjoyed the opportunity to talk to you about our results and hope to do it again.
So we're going to wrap up the program this morning, as we indicated in the introduction, if you are listening, with another good friend of ours from Access Health CT. Andrea Ravitz is with us. She's the Director of Marketing and Sales for Access Health Connecticut, which is the marketplace for health insurance under Obamacare. And a lot of interesting things happening. Open enrollment has begun. However, the period for open enrollment is eclipsed this year. So it's even more important, if you're out there, to get involved, to make your inquiries, to perhaps choose your plan and do it sooner rather than later. Early is better in this case. But we're also seeing some really interesting and favorable trends, which we'll talk about. But Andrea, if you would, as we kind of mentioned before we put on the microphone this morning, beyond my introduction, just give a quick refresher to the folks listening about what Access Health CT is all about and why it even exists here as a standalone entity in Connecticut.
Absolutely. First of all, thank you so much for having us. As you mentioned, the open enrollment period for people to come through Access Health Connecticut to be able to have access to quality health care coverage started November 1st, and this year will be ending on December 22nd. And to answer the question about who Access Health Connecticut is, we are the organization that has been implementing the Affordable Care Act, known as Obamacare by many, since 2013. So as you might have heard, some states decided to belong to the federal platform, and some states decided that they wanted to have a state exchange. Connecticut has been one of the leading exchanges in the country, not only from an enrollment perspective, but also re-enrollment. And just in general, our outreach and messaging has been extremely successful and followed by many.
And if I recall correctly, did such a fantastic job, both pre-initiation and post-initiation, that your former CEO ended up going to work under the federal program, right?
Absolutely. He left about, I believe, for the third open enrollment to manage the healthcare.gov platform.
Yeah, so essentially we're doing it right here in Connecticut, and I guess the numbers are showing it. For what I was hearing from a national perspective, there was a great influx in the first few days of open enrollment at the national level, and that is mirrored, if not exceeded, here in Connecticut.
Absolutely. I mean, there's a couple of things to consider. If you see the amount of news and messages and, in general, talk about the Affordable Care Act, this open enrollment is comparable to the first one. And what I mean by that is the topic was national news almost every day. And good, bad, or ugly. I mean, it was just in the media. So what we're seeing is with the constant changes and tries to repeal and replace this law, it continues to be top of mind for a lot of people. So this is creating a lot of good questions and people coming to just see their options. So that is it's a very good thing. And I just want to remind everybody that regardless of all the noise that we're hearing from Washington, the law continues to be the law, and people still need to get health care coverage.
And perhaps ironic, for good or ill, that all of the negative backlash is actually working its way into the ears and hearts and minds of Americans and folks here in Connecticut, and for whatever reason, inspiring them, if they didn't have coverage or had inferior coverage or were on their parents' coverage and then aged out of that, they are moving enthusiastically to the program, which brings me to the discussion of the demographics. Initially, we were hearing part of the challenge was that those who needed the most and most expensive reimbursements for their existing conditions or their illnesses and their claims were kind of overtaxing the system because there weren't enough healthy folks that were buying into the program with maybe high deductible or limited coverage plans that would kind of make the pool out of which claims are paid a little bit more, would fortify that fund a little bit better for those who were making the large claims.
That is 100% right. So it is really important whenever you want to have some market stability to make sure that you have a good combination of people that are really needing services and doctors and prescriptions with those that see the value of preventing any type of accidents. And so, you know, we were talking about before how important it is for us to have a good balance. Last year, we had very, very positive and healthy numbers around the young invincibles. And what I mean by that are these individuals between the ages of 18 to 34 that bring a lot of stability to the market. 25% of the enrollment that were brought in to the exchange were in between this age range. That is great, and it's, you know, it has been a tough group to be able to bring that value proposition that this is not just a matter of, you know, complying with the law, but it's also bringing peace of mind for a lot of people. We see every single day people that have this mentality of, I'm young and I don't need insurance, and then all of a sudden they have an accident that might be something extremely silly, and all of a sudden they have medical debt. And so this is a lot of our messaging. It's not just around, you know, giving the facts that the law is still the law, but also the fact that this is a value for your life. Just the same way that we go and pay our car insurances every day, or if we have to take our cars to the shop, this is our life. This is our health. There is a value proposition to be made around that.
Yeah, they're understanding the better to have and not need kind of psychology.
That's true. And, you know, the tax penalty continues to be implemented. Mm-hmm. And so what we usually tell people when they're unaware of this is just think of this. You're paying something for nothing. You're paying a fine and not having health care coverage. And God forbid something happens, and all of a sudden you're seeing yourself going to the hospital and spending a night, and all of a sudden you don't have absolutely any type of coverage to be able to help you offset those medical bills.
Yeah. And as we talked about with Mr. Wadley, your CEO, about 6 weeks ago, you know, there was at that time this brouhaha over the federal compensations to insurers that has also kind of leveled out and been resolved, at least temporarily. So that I'm sure is also kind of playing into the positive trending that you and Access Health CT must be feeling.
Yeah, so there's a couple of things to mention here. What you were mentioning about the financial help, this was the funding for the cost-sharing reductions. And what the cost-sharing reductions do is to help you pay for out-of-pocket expenses, like those payments that you do when you go to the doctor. So what this does, instead of the federal government paying for those, back in August and in September, the Connecticut Insurance Department requested the both insurance companies to revise their rates, assuming that the federal government was not going to pay or fund those subsidies or financial help. So when the news got to, you know, from a national perspective that they were not going to fund that anymore, our plans already had that into account. So what the good news for our consumers is that the plans that they're seeing today in accesslct.com from both our insurance companies, Anthem and Connecticare, will not be changing. And on top of that, the financial help for both cost-sharing reductions and premium tax credits are still available. So one quick stat that I can give you is in 2017, so the past open enrollment, mm-hmm. we had about 80% of the membership enjoying some type of financial help. So this is huge. I mean, don't think that because you're making X, you're not going to be eligible, because a lot of people, like I said, we enrolled close to 112,000 people in private health insurance, and close to 80% of them enjoyed some type of financial help.
Excellent. Folks, if you just tuned in, getting ready for our music day or our additional programming on all of our stations, we're visiting at the end of the program this morning with Andrea Ravitz. She is the Director of Marketing and Sales for Access Health Connecticut, the Connecticut marketplace for healthcare under Obamacare. And we're speaking of national having control to some extent over local. Even though Connecticut has its own independent marketplace, you're still bound by changes that have been made to the big picture, which means, as we said earlier, a shortened open enrollment period. So it's mission critical. If you are aging out of your parents' policy, you may have unfortunately lost work and the benefits that come with it, or you just were kind of blowing it off and didn't subscribe under Obamacare to some sort of health care. Sooner rather than later is going to be the ticket to get in with Access Health CT. We could tell you they're making it so easy that maybe their marketing budgets were cut at the national level, but they are doing open enrollment fairs every Saturday until the end of open enrollment. They have an expanded network of enrollment locations in Bridgeport, Danbury, East Hartford, Milford, New Britain, New Haven, Norwich, Stamford, and Waterbury. And their website is available to you whether you're on your lunch break from work or at 2 in the morning in your pajamas. You can go to accesshealthct.com and get all the information you need or get started. Andrea, thank you once again for being with us this morning and continuing to help remind us. So in the last 3 or 4 minutes that we have with you, just let folks know the critical details that they need if they're approaching Access Health CT for the very first time to try to get enrolled. Do they need paperwork? Do they need any kind of numbers? Would they be expected to have to put down money as soon as they initiated the process? So what are a few of the important final points we need to remind consumers about?
Absolutely. So there's number one, let's start with the doors that you can come through to be able to get enrolled. So number one, you can go to our website, accesshealthct.com. This website is available in English and Spanish. You can also use your mobile device or smartphones to sign up. We also, like you were saying, have 10 enrollment locations around the state, all Help is free at this enrollment locations or around the state with brokers and certified enrollment specialists. That all you have to do is visit accessLCT.com, click on the link that says Get Help, and just by inputting your zip code, there's going to be a list of every single person that is around your area, your office, your family's house, wherever you are, to be able to help you. The other thing is our call center is available, and it is speaking over 100 languages, because we know we have a very small state but pretty diverse. So if you know of a family member, a friend, or anybody that needs insurance and they don't speak English or Spanish, please tell them to call the call center and just ask for somebody to that speaks in their language. Now, very important to remember, preparation to enroll is really, really crucial to make sure that this whole application process goes smoothly. So make sure that you have information such as Social Security numbers, any type of immigration documents, the most recent tax return, employment information like pay stubs, and any type of insurance coverage that you or anybody in your family currently has. So all this, the list of information is included on our website, accessLCT.com. You can click on Learn More to understand which documents you need to have. Now, you were talking about payments. You do not have to pay Access Health Connecticut a dime. You go, you choose a plan, whether it's online, over the phone, or in person, and then once you choose that plan, the payment will go directly to your insurance company. So it's really important that you don't think that by just signing up, you're done. You sign up, you need to go and start paying your monthly payments to the insurance company that you chose. One very, very important thing, we know that this is a complex process. If you go to accessLCT.com and you click on Plan Comparison Tool, so just look for the woman that is wearing a red blazer, click on that. This is a tool that, after asking you some personal questions, will be able to give you some suggestions on the best plans based on the doctors that you want, prescriptions that you have, and medical service usage. So once again, we are here to help. December 22nd is the last day for you and your family to enroll. AccessHealthCT.com, website, or in person.
Excellent. Always very good to speak with folks from Access Health CT. Andrea Ravitz is returning to our program. No matter who we speak with, it's always very informative and thorough information. And we can't stress enough that you should be enrolling as soon as possible to avoid any kind of last-minute issues and get you insured and enrolled and on the bank as quickly as possible. So, Andrea, thank you so much for your time this morning.
My pleasure.
Best of luck with this open enrollment period here for 2017.
You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host and do not necessarily represent the views of Connoisseur Media. If you have a suggestion for a guest, an issue, or a community calendar item relevant to the audience and communities we serve, you must make a request for consideration in writing via email to me at john.voket@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file, reflecting the full scope of our station's responsiveness to critical issues in the communities we serve, can be viewed upon request weekdays during normal business hours in the New Haven area at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford, and for our Hartford stations at 869 Blue Hills Avenue in Bloomfield. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. This is John Voket, Director of Public Affairs for Connoisseur Media. Join us again at this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. Don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab at our radio station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.